You would think a hungry child would want to eat just about anything, but a lot of children only want to eat what they want to eat. And so we ask, how do you get an obstinate child to eat what you want them to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,413th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kowloon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host of this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, when it comes to feeding the child, few children are more difficult to feed than those who are picky eaters. You know what they should eat, but they know what they will eat. When what you know they should eat is not what they will eat, you're likely to be facing a hunger strike to manage. For those who are trying to feed a child who will not eat what they are supposed to eat, there are three possible courses of action. One, confrontation, in which you set the food in front of the child and wait until he or she eats. Two is the negotiation, in which you offer a little of what the child wants to eat on the condition the child eats a little of what you want them to eat. And three, capitulation, in which you let them eat what they want to eat and hope they grow out of their obstinance. For parents of picky eating children, this negotiation of getting the kid to eat can be an emotional nightmare. After all, that food the child will not eat is their future. But what if you are the child's nanny? The difficulties of managing a picky eating child are doubled, as you both have a troubled child and troubled parents to contend with. Given that double trouble, who better to ask how to feed the child than a professional nanny? With that, we welcome Daniel Flint, who is Maryland's Danny the Nanny. Well, Danielle, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's so nice to be here.
So I have to ask you, were you a picky child as a picky eater as a child?
I would say I was on the pickier side, but certainly not as picky as some of the children I've worked with.
Okay, good. Well, I was not a picky eating child, but my kid brother was. Meat and potatoes, and that was it. Now, I watched as my parents tried what they might to get him to eat his veggies. No way. But you know what? Eventually, he grew out of that and developed naturally in all other respects. A handsome, healthy guy. And so that was my first experience with picky eating. But I have to ask you, as a nanny, you're a professional caregiver, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you run across picky eating in your career as a nanny?
Yes, I have. I have seen eaters across the board from I will only eat chicken nuggets all the way to kids who have very expensive taste and only want, the priciest foods, whether or not the parent has any interest in giving them to the child.
Well, before we move on, what is it about chicken nuggets? And
you know, I think it's a comfort. It's fried. It's protein, which at least you're getting protein. And then you can dip it in anything you want. So it's something that you can smother in ketchup or honey mustard or ranch or just honey. It's certainly easier to get in a child's mouth. But
it seems to be universally a favorite for kids.
Yes, definitely. Oh, for most kids at least.
Yeah, good. And then was I wrong about as being a nanny, that you have double trouble in that you have to work with a child who's a picky eater. Then you have to worry about deal with parents who are freaked out because their child is a picky eater. So you're kind of caught in between there.
There's certainly some families where that's the case. You have some parents who just get so frustrated because their child won't eat what they want them to eat. So then they let the child choose not to eat, and an hour later, the child has a tantrum because they're hangry. And so the parent learns, okay, fine, I'll just feed them only carbohydrates because I know they'll eat that, and then they'll be full and I won't have to deal with the tantrum later. Well, even a three-year-old can't survive on pasta and popcorn alone. So, in my experience, it's about finding where the child's diet is and then taking it to where I would like it to be or where they are able to experience new foods and even just try things. Because if they really don't like it, that's okay. But some kids, they just need to try it the first time and they go, oh, that looked weird and it smelled weird and I didn't want to put it in my mouth. But once I did, I really liked it.
Now, going back to the parents, how do you manage them? Because it would seem like they would almost be more difficult to manage than the kid who's refusing to eat this. You have to have some kind of negotiation with a parent so that you work out a plan that you're both on this track, right?
Yes. Some parents want me to just continue what they've been doing because they don't want to make my job harder. And they know that this will work, and they know that, you know, the kid will have a full stomach when I leave for the day. Other parents, and some of these parents I just happen to meet at school pickups, are sitting there going, I don't know what to do because my child only eats five things and three of them are terrible for her. So what do I do? And it's really finding that compromise. In any situation, I feel like as the nanny, my best option is to be the balance to the parents. So if it's a two-parent household,
then it's even more complex, right? So you have to work out a deal. Not only you have to work out a deal with parents, but you have to work out a deal between parents.
Yes.
So you have to negotiate with a husband and a wife, right?
And sometimes the parents aren't communicating with each other, which is when it gets really complicated, because if mom's saying, hey, every night we have vegetables with dinner and we have a protein and yes, they can have carbs. And dad goes, you know what, here, you just want fries? You can have just fries. I don't want to have this argument. When you come in, the kids look at you and they go, okay, where are your boundaries? How do I manage to get you to just feed me fries if that's all I want to eat?
You're like the substitute teacher that comes into the classroom and all the kids are going, oh boy, it's a substitute teacher. We can get what we want now.
That's right. And that's anytime I start with a new family, I have to set those boundaries with children and go, okay, I know. You want, whether it's true or not, you want to tell me that mommy or daddy lets you eat whatever you want and whatever you want happens to be candy. That's nice. That's not happening when I'm in charge.
Ah, now this is something that a lot of parents don't do anymore is set boundaries. Is that true or is that just my imagination?
it really depends on the parent. Some parents don't want to have to set boundaries. They want to sit there and go, okay, well, you know, if I just ask them again and again, maybe they'll do it. Other parents get so frustrated that it creates an environment where the child may be doing things out of fear or avoiding punishment simply because the parent is overwhelmed. Because we have to remember, we're adults and we may not, if we don't feed ourselves, for example, and we're not eating right, then we do get overwhelmed and we still have that little person inside us who needs to be fed and needs enough water. And sometimes we take care of kids and we forget to take care of ourselves. And that's when I think parents find themselves more overwhelmed and then more likely to take kind of shortcuts because they don't want to deal with their overwhelm and their children's overwhelm as well.
And of course, the children pick up on the parents' frustration. And I suspect try to take advantage of that too.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
At what age, as being a nanny, at what age do children start developing the ability to manipulate those around them, you know, like their parents, for example, or you? At what age do you sense that they're actively manipulating the people around them?
It depends on the child. I would say around 5 is when you really start seeing it happen, obviously. But it depends on what you're thinking about manipulation-wise, because there's plenty of 2-year-olds who, you know, have a little bump. And if no one's there to watch them and go, oh, whatever. But if there's an adult there who will react, they go, ah, I'm in so much pain and tears all over the place. So even infants, I wouldn't call it manipulation, but they can read the room way more than we give them credit for.
So even though they're kids, they're a lot smarter than you would think that they would be. And they're actively working their environment to change it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. This is Michael Olson, the Food Chain Radio Program. Today, we're talking with Maryland's Danny the Nanny, none other than Danielle Flynn. How long have you been a nanny, Danielle?
Over 2 decades.
So if there's anybody to know, it's Danny the Nanny. So we're talking about feeding the kid, which is always an interesting adventure. I want you to stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Danielle Flint, who is Danny the Nanny, up there in the Maryland neck of the woods, where it is spring, which is we're happy to hear for you. There's nothing more fun than spring. After a winter, and you folks have had a winter, so welcome to spring.
We have.
Okay, we're talking about feeding the child, which, of course, is what we as adults must do and must do well, because that child is our future. And if we don't do a good job of feeding the child, we are all going to be in big trouble for the future. And so feeding the child is very important. Now, we pretty much, parents, have a pretty good idea of what we want that child to eat. We want it to eat the child to eat a balanced meal with proteins and and vitamins and minerals in the vegetables and carbohydrates. So we have a pretty good idea of what we want the child to eat. But children often get the idea that they want to eat something else or nothing else. And so we're fixed with facing these problems of basic eating disorders. And if you do a quick search on childhood eating disorders, you'll find 100 million problems to deal with. And I thought, who better to describe these issues than Danny the Nanny, who gets to see a lot of different children and also see how they go about eating. What percentage of the children have no eating disorders, in your rough guessing estimation, Danny? Danielle?
Probably about 50%.
So half the kids have no trouble. That means half of them do have problems. Holy smokes. That's a lot of people to have trouble eating disorders. Would you describe kind of the spectrum of eating disorders for us?
Yes. So you'll have anything from children who have extreme sweet teeth. And, you know, that's really the only thing they want to eat. I was that child.
Sweet tooth? Do they need to have the sweets?
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's, what am I going to get out of this? You know, you want me to eat what's on my plate? Well, you know, what's for dessert? Which is a question that I get from kids occasionally. And that is my answer, depending on what's going on, is we don't need to worry about dessert because based on the way your plate looks right now.
Okay.
And, you know, if they're not eating. But that was my parents' rule, was we're not even discussing dessert.
So this is the confrontation technique, right? This is the confrontation. So your parents are telling you, no sense thinking about dessert until you eat what's on your plate, and that's the rule. I'm the boss. So that's the confrontation.
It is a certain amount of confrontation. There's also the aspect of, you know, if I sit a child down for a meal and they're doing well, and I only have to go, okay, you know, have that carrot, you know, have a couple more bites of protein. Then at the end, whether or not they've asked for dessert, I'm happy to go, hey, why don't we have a small scoop of ice cream? Because you did so well this time. And that's the positive reinforcement. It's not an assumption that dessert is going to happen. It's the, wow, this time you did a really good job. I'm so proud of you. Do you want a cookie?
Yeah. Celebration, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we all deserve a treat sometimes, especially mm-hmm. when we've done something that is so difficult and so frustrating for us.
Well, that's an easy negotiation if the child will buy into it. And what will happen then if the child, have you run across a situation where the child says, no, not going to buy into that. I am not going to eat that stuff no matter what.
Yes, there are definitely kids who will not even, they'd just rather starve. They would honestly, because part of it is they know that sooner or later somebody is going to feed them something else.
So it's like a hunger, they're actually a hunger strike, right?
It can be a hunger strike. Some kids just aren't that hungry to begin with at the times where you're trying to feed them. And whether that's about, you know, this is time in our schedule where we can feed you. You know, we've got to do dinner and then we have to do bath time and then we have to go to bed. So right now I need you to eat. And so that also comes down to, okay, if 6 o'clock is dinner time, I gave them snacks right after school and then they had another snack an hour later, maybe we don't have that other snack. Or maybe we make sure that other snack is something super healthy and light so that when dinner comes around, they're actually hungry again.
Yeah. And I was wondering about snacks, because that's an awful deleterious way of feeding the child, but it gets right down to it. You have to be pretty careful about that, don't you? Because if you feed too many snacks, there goes the evening meal. And then they're only going to eat what they want to eat.
I'm losing you, Michael.
Ah.
Sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear you.
Oh, okay. Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay, good. Yes, I was thinking about the danger of snacks and how it can easily disrupt a main meal. Our family, my mother, was always very religious about preparing a meal for the family. And the meal always consisted of everything you'd want to eat, plus a dessert at the end. And I think having that full spectrum of food, I was never much of a candy person as a consequence of that. I think that your body, the body was well fed and wasn't craving anything like sweets or anything. But I was thinking the danger of snacks always tend to be carbohydrates or sweets of some kind. And if you feed them the sweets in between meals, you're in danger of destroying the efficacy of the meal. So that must be a very touchy thing to do snacks right.
Yes. Snacks are really a necessity for kids because they burn through calories so quickly. They're always doing some sort of physical activity. They're running around. Their brain is growing so quickly that they need a lot of calories. That's why they eat usually around the same amount as adults, depending on the child. Toddlers, for example, will really eat one meal a day, and then they'll have snacks throughout the rest of the day. And that's a very normal eating schedule for a toddler. It's not because the parent is being overly permissive or anything.
It's just the way
eat. Yeah, I mean, they have tiny stomachs because they're tiny humans. So, okay. You know, they still need, they may have a snack at 9 a.m. and then another snack at 10 a.m. After having breakfast at 6 or 7. But, you know, they need those little incremental snacks to keep their blood sugar high enough so they don't have a meltdown. And as you get older, with, for example, a 7-year-old, you know, kind of that whole elementary school range, they need a snack at school. They're going to need, of course, their breakfast, their lunch, and their dinner. A snack after school, for sure. And then depending on their physical activities or their after school programs, how late they're going to be up, they may need more snacks. But it comes down to making sure that the snacks they have are healthy things. So yogurt, if you have something, you know, a cold place to store it, cheeses. I love to give kids if they're into cheese. Some kids aren't. And then fruits and vegetables. If you have a child who's willing to eat veggies, carrot sticks, celery sticks with peanut butter and raisins, we used to call them ants on a log. Some kids go nuts for those. I certainly did. But it really just depends on the child and their preferences. When I pack school lunches and school snacks, I always aim to give the child healthy options. I don't necessarily expect them to come back with an empty lunchbox and to say, oh, you know, look at me, I ate all of my lunch. Maybe they don't like grapes, or they don't like grapes that day. But the fact that they have the healthy options and that you continue to give them food that you know they'll eat, that's healthy, as well as food, new foods to try. Because maybe their friend will go, oh, you have strawberries today? And a kid who would never have touched their strawberries suddenly goes, oh, strawberries are good.
There you go. So kids teaching kids how to eat, as they teach kids, other kids, how to do just about everything when it gets right down to it, very important. Then I suppose carbohydrates are important as well, because they need that energy food too, don't they?
They do. The carbs break down. That's why athletes will carbo load before big events. You know, if kids are swimming, they're doing karate, dance classes, all sorts of things. You want to make sure that they have that sugar ready in the form of carbohydrates and other, you know, whole fruits or even dried fruits, especially in winter. On your coast, you have access to constant fresh fruit. And I'm so jealous. I miss that. But out here we can get some, and then you know, you can supplement with dried fruit bars, nuts, because you do want to have that protein available to them. Yeah. Because once the sugar's gone, you still have to have something to work on.
And then as you do this feeding of young kids, I think it would probably be very important to when they're very young, to feed them a variety of different foods and thereby get them over the anxiety of eating strange things. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. It starts, I'm sure all moms out there know that it starts in pregnancy.
Yes, exactly.
But it doesn't have to. If you've adopted, or, you know, you maybe have some regrets about how you ate before your child was born, that's nothing to be worried about, because it's about training them. If I really can't get a kid to eat, I will blanch vegetables and puree them and hide them. If I have to,
what do you
as
mean,
a last hide resort.
Them. Hide them in the food?
Hide them in the food. And I don't mean, you know, just putting some broccoli underneath their mac and cheese. I mean, you know, adding more vegetables than you would normally see in a spaghetti recipe.
Right. So make spaghetti and hide the vegetables in the spaghetti. Does that work? Or do they spot the broccoli and go, ah, there's broccoli. I'm not going to eat that.
Well, you have to do it with things that they won't necessarily spot. And it helps to blanch food first. So you don't want, like, big pieces of onions visible. You want it to be really well well pureed. And then there's also options like naming the foods or giving them fun colors that are naturally available. So using beet juice in a muffin and then calling them princess cupcakes because they're pink now. There you have the iron from beets, And you can put whatever else in the muffin, make it like a savory muffin, maybe a breakfast muffin or something. And the kid goes, princess cupcakes or princess muffins. These are like so cool. It doesn't matter that they're not, you know, covered in extra sprinkles and tons of sugar because they're pink.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. Today we're talking with Nanny. A real live Danny, and her name is Danny. Well, it's actually Danielle Flynn, and she is Danny the Nanny in Maryland out there, and looking toward California sometime soon. So there you go. When we come back, I'd like to delve into the really tough cases of feeding the child. So please do stay tuned. We will be right back. Welcome back. We're talking about feeding the child with Danielle Flint, who is Nanny, no, Danny the Nanny. And how long have you been Danny the Nanny, Danielle?
Well, Danny the Nanny is something I've created recently as my story, but
It's a good story. It's a friendly presentation. And if you're a parent looking for a nanny, Danny would be a fun one to consider. So nice marketing there, I think.
Yeah. I've had a lot of fun with it. But I've been nannying for over 2 decades. So I feel like I'm pretty experienced in the area. Certainly have kids who have kids of their own now who I've nannied.
Now, you mentioned having fun, which to me, I think, would be a very important part of being a nanny, especially a nanny who is trying to get a picky child to eat food. So is having fun a part of your repertoire?
Absolutely. I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't having fun.
Good.
That's why I love it.
And do the children respond when you're having fun? Are they more likely to be having fun and eat what you suggest?
They do.
Good. And
sometimes, depending on the child, but they do. The more involved they are with making the food and seeing, it really helps if they see siblings or you or other people around them eating what they're expected to eat. I think it tampers down some of the anxiety that they may have, especially when it comes to trying new foods.
Okay. And anxiety is what it's all about. And speaking of anxiety, I understand that there is a real spectrum of eating disorders, just like there's a spectrum of just about everything else. You might start with a picky eater and the spectrum would go all the way up to anorexia or bulimia. Would that be a good description of the spectrum, Daniel?
Well, it kind of depends because you have picky eaters and that can sometimes be related to neurodivergence, especially in some more extreme cases where they only have a few safe foods, and it's finding, if you have a neurodivergent child, it can be even more challenging to open the spectrum of safe foods because you're not just thinking about taste, you're thinking about texture, you're thinking about, you know, how tough the food is beyond just like the general texture in your mouth. The way it goes down, all sorts of things. But with anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa, and I'm not a licensed practitioner, these issues come up much later. Plenty of toddlers are picky and they grow out of it. But with eating disorders that you're more likely to see in teenagers and older children, that comes down to a a disjointed reality in seeing your body and believing that you are too overweight, even when you are completely skeletal, to everyone else's view.
So it's really it becomes a mental issue that your mind runs away with you.
It is.
And that does
it
not
is.
Happen.
It is,
with,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that does not really happen with children then, as young children and toddlers.
Thankfully, yes. Yes, that's something that usually comes, I would say, around middle school or high school, and most commonly among girls and young women. So boys and men certainly experience it too. Coming from society's pressures and in some cases, parents' pressures.
Yeah, all kinds of pressures. Well, the academic communities come up with an actual name for the eating disorders. They call it avoidant/restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID, which is a big mouthful to swallow for anybody, but that would take an academic to come up with something like that. But at any rate, they kind of divided into three different sections. The first one would be sensory-based avoidance, which was just what you were talking about. Children or the child who is sensitive to texture, smell, and so on. Like, I suppose, trying to get a kid to eat kimchi would be a good example of that. Not going to eat that. Another is a lack of interest in food, low motivation for it to eat food, and fear of aversive consequences. So it's anxiety about choking and vomiting and pain from past trauma or something. But the one that captured my attention especially was lack of interest in food, low appetite and motivation. Have you ever run across a child who was just not interested in food?
Yes, absolutely. Some kids just, especially at certain times of day, perhaps, usually at some point a child will get hungry. But there's also because of the rigidity of schedules often, we want to feed kids at certain times. And they're not hungry. And, you know, eating is an intense, like, food is an intense part of culture. It's a part of how we connect with each other. And it's something that should be enjoyable. And if you don't allow it to be something to be enjoyed, then a child could easily lose interest, especially if you're not giving them the options that they want. So having a family meal together, sitting down and enjoying somebody's company while you eat can be a huge aspect of helping kids take the time to get away from devices, to stop worrying about whatever's going on at school, or even voice their concerns about things that are going on with them, and know that, okay, I'm being cared for, I'm getting the attention of the adults that I want, and yeah, maybe I don't really want to eat, but this is what we're doing right now, so I'm kind of going to go along with it because this is what everyone's doing.
Do you think there's anything more important to developing healthy eating habits than the family meal?
Oh, I would say it's a combination of a lot of things. Yeah. not everyone has the opportunity to have a family meal, but if you give the children healthy options and they know that the healthy options may be the only options,
yeah,
they'll decide, okay, if I have five options of what I can eat, I'm going to pick the one that I like more than the other four, even though what I really want is a brownie.
Well, I suspect you're right. Not everybody has the opportunity to have a family, to have a regularly scheduled family meal. I suspect very few kids do have that opportunity. That said, I still suspect having a regularly scheduled family meal is probably going to be one of the most significant things in developing healthy eating habits in life. Simply by virtue of all that you discussed, relaxing out of the day, hearing about the trials and tribulations of the other members of your family. Oh, goodness, everybody else goes through this too. Relaxing into eating slowly without gobbling, you know, as we tend to do when we're always on the run as we are. All of those things, if practiced regularly, really are character-building things that are so precious. And I know for a fact that not everybody gets them. I know in talking with everybody I talk to, I know it's kind of rare when it gets right down to it. But to make good for not doing that, there's lots of things that can be done, like you suggest, to really help things along. I'd like to, if we can, switch our topic now to latchkey eating. My son-in-law was raised as a latchkey eater, and he's as healthy as can be now. But when he ate, he describes his eating, it was always mac and cheese or something like that. How do you recommend people approach latchkey eaters in the family?
Well, latchkey children are much more rare than they used to be. But as a child grows up, they'll need as an adult. I think when you send a kid out of the house at 18, if they don't know how to boil water, if they don't know how to do their laundry, then you have failed them in some ways. And so what I try to do with my kids is around the age of 10, I try to give them opportunities to cook in the kitchen, to with supervision. You've things like the knife and the stove. It's always under strict supervision, and it's not just, okay, you can
go ahead and do what
now.
You want.
It's okay, we're going to cut this thing. Here's the cutting board. This is the knife that you use. Here's how you use it. Now you've seen me use it this way. Now it's your turn to try doing the same thing. As for latchkey children, it makes sense that he was eating a lot of mac and cheese, ramen, all of those things that, you know, college students are known for eating, because those are things that are easy for the child to make on their own. These days, you know, you might have a kid who wants to make their own avocado toast. And, you know, as long as they know how to make the egg, if they have an egg on it, cut up the avocado without hurting themselves. and for a latchkey child, you know, they need to know safety things like, yes, sometimes knives slip, and sometimes you need that first aid, and you need to know the difference between a paper cut and a cut that really needs to be attended to when you need to call 911, that sort of thing. Because the more responsibility you give a child in any area, but especially in a kitchen, which is a dangerous part of
dangerous
the house.
Place. Especially as a latchkey kid, who's going to teach you? Unless you have a nanny there. Because they're a latchkey kid because their parents are gone. And so you're really correct. That's a dangerous place.
And they don't have a nanny.
Yeah. So any tips, Nanny?
It can be.
Any tips from Danny the Nanny for parents? What's the most important thing?
I would say go at the pace that you and your child need to go at. Don't push them to be like other kids. Just because Janie's, you know, making 4-course meals doesn't mean that your child needs to. If your child's learning how to use the stove on the weekend, and that's the only time you can teach them, make pancakes together, make soup, whatever they want. And the more you involve them in what you're doing, the more interested they're going to be, and the less it's going to be like a chore. The better prepared they're going to be in the long run.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Feeding the Child with Danielle Flint, who is Danny the Nanny. I want to thank you all for tuning in and joining us. And really think about the importance of feeding the child, because they are our future. And the better we feed them, the better off our future is going to be. Thank you for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What right here on The Food Chain. And thank you, Danielle.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.